This is Mac Format This Week. 30 minutes of news, reviews, Q&A, and features from the world of the Macintosh, iPod, and iPhone. Coming up on this edition, we peer into our crystal ball for some Macworld Expo predictions. From an iPhone firmware update...
One of the coolest new features is the inclusion of a kind of fake GPS that uses cell phone mass triangulation to figure out where you actually are.
To the highly rumored Ultra Portable.
Ever since Apple killed off its much-loved pocket-sized portable powerhouse that was the 12-inch PowerBook G4, folks have been clamoring for a replacement, and think that this is a year where it might actually come from Apple.
Chris Finn joins me to review the rumors as we count down to Steve Jobs' much-anticipated Expo keynote. All that and more as we ring in 2008 on this edition of Mac Format This Week. With the resources of Mac Format Magazine, this is Mac Format This Week. Hello, everyone, and Happy New Year. I'm Brad Gibson. I can't think of another product family that year in and year out receives holiday gifts. And while they may be a little belated, the lovers of the Mac and iPod platform are used to it by now. Christmas, for us, always comes about 2 or 3 weeks later. We know it as Macworld Expo. It's the venue that Apple CEO Steve Jobs uses to show off a myriad of new Apple products. Last year was the debut of the iPhone. 2 years ago was the iMac with an Intel Core Duo processor. So what will it be this year? An upgraded iPhone? Upgraded desktops or laptops? An ultra-mobile Mac? It's time for our annual Expo predictions, and joining us with his best bets on what Steve Jobs will unveil is our resident soothsayer and Mac Format deputy editor, Chris Finn. Happy New Year to you, Chris.
And Happy New Year to you too, Brad.
Chris will be a soothsayer. I will also join him in doing the same. And we're going to rate each of the rumors on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most likely and 1 being the least likely. And let's get right into it here, Chris. Apple has done a good job so far in keeping under wraps the new products that will debut on Tuesday, January 15th. But it can't keep the rumor mill completely shut. We're hearing a lot of buzz about there being a myriad of possibilities. Let's go over some of the rumor news we've heard and talk about the pros and the cons of each. And let's begin first with the iPhone firmware update. We've already seen it online. Tell us about it.
So we've already seen, as you say, videos of some very legitimate looking shots of the new firmware. Version 1.1.3, it's likely again that this will break any hacks and cracks that people are applying to their iPhone, but that's at the expense of some quite cool functionality. One of the things you can do is you can drag the icons on the home screen of the iPhone, called the Springboard. You can drag them around to rearrange them to suit yourself, and you can also have multiple pages of Springboard so that you can have more applications on your iPhone than just the grid that would first be suggested by the iPhone front page. That's important because as developers apply Apple's SDK to develop their own applications for the iPhone, we'll see more and more applications being added, so that's quite an important way of allowing you to add more apps to the main screen and access them quickly.
Right.
We've also seen the ability to add, or rather to use, homepage, to use web page URLs as links on the front page. That's quite important. With web applications, you can just have a URL set up as an icon on the iPhone Springboard, tap that, and you've got one-click access to web applications.
Now, those are just a few of the features we've heard about, Chris. One of the biggest ones is a pseudo GPS for Google Maps. Tell us about it.
That's right. When the iPhone first came out, people were quite disappointed that it didn't have GPS built in like the products like the Nokia N95 do. What the firmware update 1.1.3 allows you to do is a kind of fake GPS. It's actually quite clever. And Vodafone, for example, in the UK has been doing it for quite a long time with their Vodafone Live service. And what it does is it uses triangulation. It looks at the strength of signal that you're getting bounced off various mobile phone cell towers around you. And using those figures, it can triangulate and make a very good guess, usually to within about a metre or two, about where you actually are. And now if you go to Google Maps on the iPhone, or rather, when the 1.1.3 update is applied and you go into Google Maps, there's a little icon at the bottom right, looks a bit like a target, tap that, and it will zoom you into where you are then. That's really important because it allows Apple and third-party partners to do web services and other services based on where you are. So I fully expect to see in the fullness of time things like find me the nearest cash point, find me the nearest taxi rank, find me the nearest cafe that I can go to that's got a wireless hotspot. That sort of stuff, dead easy to do, and that was exactly what will happen.
Okay, now, Chris, you mentioned a minute ago that the update to the firmware of the iPhone is very important for developers, and I'm sure we're going to be hearing a lot of news at this keynote from Steve Jobs about the SDK, the development package that will allow developers to develop applications for the iPhone. Tell us what you think is might be coming there.
Okay, the SDK itself, as you say, the software development kit is not slated for introduction until about February, but there have been quite believable murmurings among the development community that certain developers, whether it's top-tier developers or just favourite developers of Apple, have actually been seeded an early version of the SDK. The reason I can think for that happening is that Steve Jobs wants them to have developed some demo applications that he can then show at Macworld Expo keynote. So I rather suspect that on January 15th, he'll say, guys, the SDK is on track, you'll have it in February, we expect to see some really cool applications being developed, and here's some of the things you might expect to see.
All right, so 10 out of 10 on SDK news as we lead up to the announcement and the release of the SDK in February. Third on our list, 9 out of 10, is iTunes video rentals. Let's talk about this, Chris. We've been waiting for this for a long time, and it seems as though, from some of the news that we've heard in the last couple of weeks, that it is going to become a reality.
Yeah, I mean, rentals is a great way of actually consuming media, and I think we're quite used in this country and in the States to video rental stores, and we're quite used to the idea of paying a few dollars or a few pounds in our case and getting a movie temporarily and then sort of giving it back. And the Fairplay DRM that Apple uses is ideal for allowing sort of expiring media like that. And yeah, I absolutely think that Apple will start doing rentals. We've seen reported in the Financial Times deals with Fox and murmuring since then that other major movie studios are coming on board to do rentals through iTunes. It's a great revenue stream for movie studios of that kind to be able to get movies rented through iTunes, and I think that we'll see that much more. And I think, as you and I are about to talk about, we'll see that happening through Apple TV as well as through iTunes on your Mac.
Right, I do too. And let's move on to the next thing which you just mentioned, and that is an Apple TV firmware upgrade and possibly a new Apple TV piece of hardware in itself.
The Apple TV is a really strange little product in Apple's lineup. I mean, Steve Jobs himself calls it a hobby. But despite the fact that critically the Apple TV didn't do all that well, and I personally am not a fan of the product, it's been selling extraordinary numbers, particularly when you consider how lukewarm the critical reception was for it. And it's this weird little product that's just sitting in hundreds and hundreds of thousands of homes that Apple's not doing all that much with. So I think we'll see the rental thing happening through Apple TV. I think you'll have a front row like interface to be able to just rent movies. A bit like, you know how at the moment if you go in through front row you have the ability to view movie trailers like that. I suspect you'll have the same sort of grid of movie posters or DVD covers. You go in, you'll say, I'd like to rent this, and it'll be done. But there's a ton of other stuff that Apple can do. I mean, it's just sitting there. It's got a USB port on it that's not really for anything. People can use it for, Apple said it's for diagnostics, in inverted commas. But I mean, the USB port on the Apple TV isn't really used for anything. Imagine the sort of plug that could be developed for that. So I think we'll definitely see a firmware upgrade for existing Apple TVs at the bare minimum to allow rentals. But, I mean, the mind boggles, it could do a ton of other stuff through that as well, and it could be a really clean, simple portal for people who just want email or who want access to simple websites, widgety sort of websites.
You know, Chris, I think a lot of people who own Apple TV right now would be very, very upset. You have a lot of irate Apple TV owners right now. If they didn't do some type of firmware upgrade and give them this ability to do these video rentals and lots of other neat new gadgets and gadgets and bells and whistles.
Absolutely right. But I mean, having said that, I think we'll also see some new hardware. Either the actual Apple TV itself being updated, whether it's with more storage or more functions or some more options that can come out from that, or we might see something that actually plugs into that USB port. I mean, the one thing that's always annoyed me about Apple TV is, despite its name, the one thing it doesn't do is TV. You have fantastic hardware and software bundles from the likes of Elgato and TerraTech and Melia making TV tuners for the Mac, but Apple has steadfastly refused to do it with the Apple TV, presumably, at least in part, because they're assured a revenue through iTunes store purchases and rentals, which they would lose out on if you had terrestrial TV broadcast in there. But that would be a great development. I'd love to see them actually add a TV tuner to the Apple TV as well.
Right. Now, let's move on to number 5 on our list. We don't feel as though that it has as much of a chance of likelihood of coming out as some people do, because it has really been rumored a lot in the news in the past 2 or 3 weeks, and that is an ultra-mobile Mac. Let's talk about that, Chris. Various devices have tried to fill the role between a PDA and a full-blown laptop over the years, but none has really taken off. Is this the time that Apple really can take advantage of this and do something great?
Absolutely. Apple's actually got a really good track record with doing ultra-portable devices. If you look back at the PowerBook Duo, it was a great slimmed-down Mac that you then sort of slotted into a dock to get more functions from, but as itself, on its own, it was a very lightweight, easy-to-use, and very portable Macintosh. And then, of course, you've got the classic 12-inch PowerBook G4 that, when Apple introduced the MacBook, it killed off, much to the chagrin of a lot of people, because the 12-inch PowerBook was a fantastic marriage of power and portability, but you also had the ability to hook it up to a DVI monitor and get some use it as a proper desktop machine. Its loss has been really hard felt by a lot of people in the Mac community, and you're absolutely right also to say that nobody really has managed to nail this mark. I mean, Microsoft famously talked about the UMPC, the ultra mobile PC, and we've seen Microsoft trying to introduce or trying to put its weight behind the tablet PC, neither of which have really worked. But the very fact that we've seen so much interest in something like the iPhone that almost functions as a small portable computer, and the fact that the 12-inch PowerBook has been so sorely missed, I think now is the absolutely ideal time for Apple to introduce a small, lightweight, stripped-down portable Mac.
And Chris, I think there's a lot of other reasons why an ultra-mobile Mac is now, and the timing of it is really important now, and that primarily it's wrapped around the fact that we now have a lot of flash memory that has come down in price, can really increase battery life, we can get the capacity up to 120 gigabytes of memory and flash memory, and really improve things dramatically, that now that really makes an ultra-mobile PC, the timing, perfect.
Yeah, I mean, you look as well at the hoo-ha around Asus's EPC, which Mac users might not know, but it's a cracking little device. It's got a 9-inch LCD in it. It's only powered by something like a 900 megahertz Celeron processor, so it's quite underpowered. It's only got, in its default configuration, 4 gigabytes of storage, but it's flying off the shelves, and it's got the community really excited. It's only £220 or so. It's a cracking little device, particularly now that we're using so many more online services, so the ability of having lots and lots of local storage is beginning to diminish. It's still very important, but it's beginning to diminish. And depending on the sort of work you do, something like that makes a lot of sense. In fact, the rumours we've seen about the ultra-mobile MacBook as well include the idea that it would have an external, separate optical drive, which, again, ultra-mobile PCs on the Windows side have been doing for a long time. You take the optical drive out, so you save on weight, on space. The optical drive is a real battery life hog as well if you're using it. And let's face it, how often do you put a CD or a DVD into your Mac? Fairly rarely. So the idea of having it separately and just being able to plug in is very beguiling.
Now, one of the other features that we've heard about besides an optical drive, an external optical drive, is also the ability to do multi-touch on one of these ultra-mobiles as well.
Yeah, I mean, it would make sense. If you look at the iPhone, the multi-touch stuff on there is good. You've got the pinch to zoom in and out and double tap to zoom in and out on particular features. But there's a lot more you can do with that. You could easily have gestures for delete, for new message. You could have gestures to do a lot of other stuff. And although the trackpad on modern laptops already is multi-touch to an extent, people with new MacBooks and MacBook Pros will know that you can sort of do two-finger scrolling. There's a lot more you can do with that, and I wouldn't be surprised to see Apple capitalizing on that technology.
All right, so that's the Ultra Portable. We believe it's an 8 out of 10 in terms of its likelihood of being announced at Macworld Expo in San Francisco. Let's move on to another 8 out of 10 that we believe is pretty a good guess that something would happen here, and that's Mac speed bumps. Maybe not across the entire line of laptops or desktops, but to some extent on many models, I do expect, Chris, we'll probably see some speed bumps, don't you?
Yeah, this is a bit of a cheaty one for us to do, I guess, because it's quite easy to predict the fact that Apple will speed bump its line. But there's a few things you can do. I mean, the Mac Mini possibly is in line for a bit of a speed bump. The MacBook Pros can maybe go up. And there's some new processors that the Mac Pros could use as well. So I'd expect to see some minor upgrades along there. But nothing fancy, nothing groundbreaking, just a few little tweaks here and there. And possibly some price movement as well in the post-Christmas season.
Now, do you think we'll see any iPod updates at all?
I'm really dubious about that. The only thing that really cries out for an update is the iPod Touch with its capacity. And it would be very easy and not all that expensive to actually increase capacity to something usable, say 32 gig or even 64. But the rest of the lineup, has been updated very recently, the iPod Classic and the iPod Nano. And things like the iPod Classic, it's at 160 gigabytes. That's pretty much at the top end of what we can even do at the moment, never mind what's economically feasible, what's technically feasible. So I don't think the Classics will see an update. It might see a price drop, but again, I don't think so. I think the iPod line will stay pretty static.
Now let's talk about the iPhone. There's some rumors that there will be a version 2.0 at Expo. We believe that on a scale of 1 to 10, it's probably only about a 4 because the phone has not been out very long, and I think Apple still wants to take advantage of the buzz with this phone the way it is before they do any major upgrade. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I'd absolutely agree. I think actually that my views on this are colored by my own perceptions, because I still haven't bought an iPhone because I want version 2, because I want them to fix some of the problems that there are with the initial release, and I really, really, really want them to introduce one at Mac Expo. But with the best will in the world, I don't think they will. I mean, it's absolutely definite that we'll see an update to the iPhone in 2008, but I think that will be towards the middle or end of the year. There are a couple of things that make that obvious. I mean, Steve Jobs talked about the late in 2008. We've seen the CEO of AT&T say that, yes, we will get it this year. We've seen rumours of a 3G iPhone happening in Japan. There's been rumours of the 3G iPhone launching in Spain in May. But I think we won't see anything happening before the summer with an update to the iPhone, which would be a full year since its introduction in the States, which would make sense.
Right. And finally on our list is iPod-ready movies on DVD. We think there's a chance of this, but it's a very slight chance, about a 3 out of 10.
This is a really cool thing. I'd love it if it happened. The idea is that, you know, at the moment, various things. In the States, you've got the DMCA, the Digital Millennium Copyrights Act, and in the UK, you've got plain old copyright protection laws stopping you from ripping your DVDs to your hard disk to watch, despite the fact that you've bought that DVD legitimately. The idea that I've seen rumoured, and it's a great idea, is that the movie studios accept that people want to watch their movies on devices other than their TV at home, and that as well as having on an optical disc that you buy in the stores, as well as having the movie that you play in your DVD player at home, it will also have an MP4 version that's iPod ready, so that you just mount that DVD on your Mac, you drag that file into your iTunes collection, and it will then synchronise to your iPhone, your iPod, or to Apple TV if you so wish. And I think that's a great idea. I'd love it if the studios actually had the imagination and the balls to go and do that. I mean, I have absolutely no problem with paying for media. I think we should pay for the creative work of others. But by the same time, I damn well want to watch it where I want to watch it, which is in most cases on my iPhone or my iPod. So it'd be great if they actually did this. And Apple has the ability to do it because of its Fair Play DRM. We might not like DRM, but the movie studios, bless them, don't have the foresight, or they're a bit too timid to actually introduce stuff without DRM. If they do this, you can put Fair Play DRM on these movie files that are on the DVDs. You copy it, you authenticate it through the iTunes store, and it's done. It'd be a great thing, but I don't think it's all that likely.
All right, so those are just some of the rumors that have been mentioned regarding announcements on Tuesday, January 15th by Steve Jobs in his keynote address. We know Apple very well to sometimes pull right out of the rabbit out of the hat with things that we haven't even mentioned here today, so you might want to look for those. That's what really makes the keynote at Expo so fantastic. Chris Finn will also be doing a live blogging on the website, macformat.co.uk, beginning at 6 p.m. London time on Tuesday, January 15th. He'll be giving you all the news as it happens, because as we all know, the keynotes are not streamed live, either audio or video, so we will be able to let you keep up with what's going on in the announcements as you hear them minute by minute on Tuesday, January 15th, again, beginning at 6 p.m. London time at macformat.co.uk. Chris, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Brad. Thank you.
Chris Finn is deputy editor of MacFormat Magazine. An email helper and an application switcheroo. Those are the two shareware choices you'll find in the upcoming January issue of Mac Format. Shareware reviewer Craig Grinnell joins us now to tell you about Mac Free Pops and application switcher menu. Thanks again for joining us, Craig.
It's good to be here, Brad.
Let's begin with Mac Free Pops version 2.3. It is basically a free shareware product. It's available at a link that you can get to much easier through our enhanced podcast, which you're probably watching right now. If not, you can get it from iTunes, and it's a great way to get directly to the links that we talk about in shareware. So let's get right to this product, Craig. Strange name. What does it do?
Well, essentially, it provides a bridge from various email providers to your email clients. In layman's terms, that means it enables you to use something like Apple Mail to send and receive email from the likes of Yahoo, Mail, Gmail and so on. And this enables you to store all of your email in one location.
All right, so how does it work?
Well, there's the FreePops application itself, and that's used to start and stop the service for dealing with incoming mail. And that also provides details for how you need to configure an account in your email client in order to receive the mail.
Now, Craig, the first thing that pops into my mind is that you're trying to configure a lot of different email clients here. How easy is it to set up?
Well, it's not quite a one-click-fixes-all application. But the thing is, if you can set up an account in your email client, you'll be fine. What you have to do is set up a separate account for each one of your webmail accounts using the configuration details that Mac FreePops provides. And for anyone who wants a little bit more flexibility, there are other options on offer as well, which include showing the status in the menu bar of Mac FreePops, automatically quitting Mac FreePops after starting the service, things like that. But it is, you know, it's pretty simple to set up if you can find your way around an email client.
Now, web-based email clients are regularly updated, so does Mac FreePops keep up with that as well?
Well, yeah, mostly. I've been using the application for months now, and there's always the odd day here and there where one of the services, such as Yahoo Mail, stops working through it. However, the application enables you to check for updates every time it starts up, and the updates are pretty frequent.
And the application is free too, right?
Yep, it's free, so you can use it for as long as you like. However, it is donationware, and one of the things that kind of bugs me is when something is donationware, no one ever bothers paying because they think everyone else is going to. And so I strongly recommend that, you know, if you end up using this application frequently, I use it every day, for example, really, you should donate some cash to the author, even if it's only a small amount, so development can continue.
All right, that's Mac FreePops version 2.3. It is donationware. It got a 5 out of 5 Mac Choice Award from Craig in the January issue. Let's move on to product number 2. It also is a Mac Choice at 5 out of 5. It is Application Switcher Menu version 2.2. It's not donationware. It costs $15. You can get to it through our enhanced podcast link. And looking at Application Switcher Menu, Craig, it's a little like stepping back in time.
Well, yeah, that's right. It's very, very reminiscent of the macOS Classic Application Switcher.
Okay, now we all know about the dock, so why use an older method of switching applications?
Well, for me, it comes down to control. I only ever have running applications in my dock. I don't have any permanent things stored there. And the order of those can't be controlled. It's kind of down to whichever thing you launched most recently, which really, really annoys me because I have a lot of things running and I can never find what I want. Now, Application Switcher Menu enables you to force the orders so apps are listed alphabetically. And it's not like you lose any of the functionality either because the dock menus are optionally available via submenus of ASM. And also, I think Leopard's dock is amazingly ugly. I think it's really, really awful, even with hacks applied. And so, frankly, keeping it hidden is a good thing in my book.
Well, let's don't get started on the Leopard dock. I have to agree with you, but let's don't go there right now. How much control do you have over the look of the application?
Well, there are all sorts of different things you can control. The icon size and the list of application switcher menu. You can decide whether the icon name appears in the menu bar or not. If it doesn't, you could just get the icon of the currently running application. You can choose whether or not to show the separator between ASM and the other menu extras. The menu width can be automatic or fixed width, and you can dim the icons of hidden applications, which is pretty handy, so you can see at a glance which applications you've got hidden.
Does ASM have any other features?
Yeah, it's got a few things which are related to the dock and window modes. For the dock, you can auto-hide it when ASM is on. That's not something I tend to use because I'd rather do that manually. But for Windows, it's got a few different things as well. You can set single application mode, which means that when an application is brought to the front, all of the other applications hide automatically. And it's also got classic window mode, which is another thing that sort of harks back to macOS Classic, which means when you click on an application's window, all of its windows come to the front. I mean, these are pretty niche features, but I suspect there are some users out there that are going to find them very, very useful.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. Okay, that's Application Switcher Menu version 2.2. You gave it 5 out of 5, a Mac Choice Award, and again, it costs $15. Those are our two best products for the month of January, Mac FreePops and Application Switcher Menu. Craig, thanks so much for joining us again. We'll see you next month.
Yep, see you next month.
Craig Grinnell reviews shareware for Mac Format Magazine. His January picks begin on page 100 in the January issue. It's question and answer time on Mac Format this week with all-knowing, all-telling Trevor Middleton. Hello, Trevor.
What was that all about, Brad?
Oh, well, you answer all the questions every week, so obviously you're all-knowing. On every show, Trevor does his best to answer your questions, and you can send us your issues to machelpme@futurenet.co.uk. Please make sure not only to tell us your name, but very important here, where you're from and how to pronounce your name. That always helps us a lot. Question one is from Dr. Alvin Felseman of Ithaca, New York, who has a puzzle for us. He wrote us, "Some time ago, I paid Apple some extra money and upgraded to QuickTime Pro so I can make adjustments to video files. Then I upgraded Mac OS X, which installed a newer version of QuickTime, and my QuickTime Pro serial number wouldn't work with the new version. Is there any way I can reinstall QuickTime 6? Trevor."
Okay, well, first of all, QuickTime Pro, for those of you who don't use it, is kind of like QuickTime on steroids, with a lot of useful extra features, such as being able to save video clips for use on an iPod, or an iPhone for that matter. Now, each time there's a major new version of QuickTime 6, 7, and so on, Apple tells us that they've incorporated some new codec or other for which they have to pay a licensing fee, so we then have to buy a new QuickTime Pro license. Now, there were so many complaints about this when QuickTime 7 came out that Apple actually issued a QuickTime 6 reinstaller, which works, and I can't emphasize this enough, with macOS 10.3.9 only. That's macOS 10.3.9 only. If you have Tiger or Leopard, you'll have to stick with QuickTime 7, I'm afraid. Brad?
All right, question two is from Ollie Harrison in Preston, Lancashire. He wrote us, "I'm partially sighted and very heavily dependent on the magnification of my Mac. While using GarageBand, viewing some web pages in Safari and Firefox, or occasionally editing video in iMovie, my mouse pointer on the screen acts very oddly. I could be in the corner of a screen or just about anywhere and about to drag or click something in these applications, and the mouse pointer suddenly moves straight back to the center of the screen before I have even clicked the button. This only happens when I use the magnification. Is there a clash between two different system preferences that I've set or a fault somewhere else?"
Okay, well, I suspect this could be one of many things, or indeed a combination of all of them, Ollie. First, I suspect that the magnification is showing up some of the inadequacies of either your mouse or your mouse mat. Now, you can get hold of a new mouse mat for pence in your local supermarket, so that has to be worth a try, first of all. And I've sent you a list of mice that use the more accurate laser tracking for you to take a look at as and when you have the time to. Also, though, I do notice that the applications you mention sometimes put quite a heavy load on your Mac's processor and memory at times, which can make your mouse unresponsive. Try running the Activity Monitor utility, which you'll find in the Utilities folder within your Applications folder, to keep an eye on what's happening when your cursor jumps about on the screen. And maybe you should get some extra memory installed in your Mac Mini, which of course doesn't have a separate graphics card. And I suspect that is another issue there, which you should be thinking about. Maybe an iMac would be a better machine for you if you're using those kind of graphics-intensive applications that you mentioned. Brad?
All right, and finally, question three is from Matt Jarvis of Southampton. He writes us, "I had to take my MacBook into my local Apple shop for repair the other day, so I made a password-protected disk image containing the contents of my mailbox from macOS X's mail application. I did this by simply dragging the mailbox from the mail window. Now, I can't restore the mailbox by dragging and dropping into mail. Do you know of any way in which I can get this mail back?"
Well, you might not be able to restore the mailbox by dragging and dropping into mail, but you certainly can if you adopt a slightly different strategy. First of all, close mail, then open a Finder window, and by the way, Columns View works best for this. Next, click on your Home folder in the sidebar, then Library, then Mail. Inside that Mail folder, you'll see a folder called Mailboxes. First, make sure you've given the mbox file a name such as Previous Inbox, so it doesn't replace your current inbox. Then drag the mbox file onto the Mail folder. Now, the next time you open Mail, you should see that mailbox restored. Brad?
That sounds very simple to do. Trevor, thanks so much for joining us again this week and answering questions.
No problem at all, Brad.
You can send us your issues to machelpme@futurenet.co.uk. Please make sure to tell us not only your name, but very important, where you're from and how to pronounce your name. And that's it for another edition of Mac Format This Week. My thanks to Chris Finn, Craig Grinnell, and Trevor Middleton. Our associate producer is Misha Sakharopoulou. Join us again for our next edition on Monday, the 21st of January, as we join you from San Francisco, when we'll review all the news and new products introduced at Macworld Expo. Until then, I'm Brad Gibson. Thanks for joining us.